Welcome to the We'll Make a Fan Out of You podcast, episode one. This is the podcast where we talk about the wrestling world. Our aim is to make you a fan of us while we talk about the greatest entertainment on the planet. I'm Aaron Newsome, and here's Nitesh T-Dog Sharma.
Bonjour.
You can listen to us wherever you get your podcast from. You can check us out on our YouTube channel, We'll Make a Fan Out of You. Nitesh, where else can they find us?
Well, thank you for that lovely introduction. Our social handles are at Make a Fan of You. You can find us on X, Instagram, and TikTok. Obviously, if you do want to see our lovely faces on YouTube, that's the podcast We'll Make a Fan Out of You. We'd love your feedback. We are very new at this. We don't know what we're doing, but wrestling only has one royal family, and that's me and Aaron. Just enjoy this podcast, give us your feedback, and yeah, that's all we want. We want to make a fan out of you.
Yeah, look out. We'll be releasing every Monday going forward. It is literally us two, a microphone each and a camera each. And that is how we're starting this. That's how we're going to go for a while. No one might like us. Everyone might love us. We'll find out.
Any feedback every Monday.
Yeah, any feedback, good or bad. Anything we can work on, we're going to try and improve as we go. This is a bit of an intro episode, as it is episode one. But we're also going to talk about the Bray Wyatt documentary that's just come out a few days ago. Bray Wyatt becoming immortal is really good. Spoilers.
I wasn't crying at all. We watched it online together, and yeah, there were some parts where we were just like, we'll just stay quiet through this bit. And I was starting to well up, and I'm pretty sure Aaron was welling up as well.
Oh yeah, there was definitely bits in that where you both being quiet and going, I won't say anything if he doesn't say anything.
Yeah, that's how it works. But let's give us a bit of more background on to why we started this podcast. What is wrestling to you, Aaron?
Well, first of all, I like money. No, we ain't going to make money for a while. We're already in the hole on this as it is. Oh, well, wrestling, I think it just popped up really early on. I just remember having Channel 4, Channel 5 on, WCW being on the TV, getting captivated by seeing Sting, going, what is this? Why has he got a baseball bat? Why is he beating people up? And then evolved from there to watching SmackDown on Saturday mornings. In the UK, it always used to be on. So it was, I think it was Thursday, not SmackDown at the time, wasn't it? So that would be on. On Saturday morning, Sky would show an edited down version where they took out most of the violence, which always good, always good.
When they used to pan out to the crowd when a chair was hit or anything bad happened. Yeah,
it was very much. If it was like that now when you're watching it, you'd turn it off straight away. But as a kid, it was, oh my God, he's just hit him. I don't have to see it. I know what he's done. No accidental blood, or if there was blood, I think it was cut away quite a lot. But yeah, and that kind of got me into it. And then I think quite a lot of people, you end up falling out with it for a little bit before dipping back in and out. It's not been there every single waking minute of growing up, but it was there for a good chunk of it. And you always seem to come back and be like, hey, Undertaker's still around. Oh, hey, John Cena's actually now important. Triple H has popped back up again. There's always bits that there's jumping in points. Every big story coming forward. We'll talk about Bray Wyatt in a bit because that was a big influence on both of us. And then you've got like CM Punk.
Boo.
That was something that grabbed your attention. We love CM Punk.
Yeah, no, I love
always
CM
tells
Punk.
The truth. Never lies.
Never lies. Not at all.
Got calm head.
For me, it's quite the opposite, actually. It's always been in my life. As embarrassing as it is, I've got my family, we all watch it, we're all pretty much the same age, part of the same age range, my uncle, cousins, brothers, even my twin sister. We just always ended up being around each other and we'd always just watch wrestling, whether that was VHSs or staying up to watch Raw live back in the 90s when it was part of the Monday Night Wars. My fondest memory was falling asleep and then waking up to everyone just going, oh my God, Mankind's won the title. Yes, it was pre-recorded, but I was like, Mankind was my favourite wrestler. I love that sort of, he was a big guy, but taking some nasty hits and chair shots to the head and always bleeding. I like my hardcore wrestling. I've always been a wrestling fan. Not as much as like other friends and stuff like that, so it was always close to my chest, but only a certain few would be like, oh, do you like the wrestling? Do you know what's going on? And I'm like, yeah, fucking love it. And then we've known each other for best part of nearly 11, 12 years now.
Well, yeah, over 12 in September, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, about 12 years. We went to college together, then we ended up working together. I didn't know you were a wrestling fan until we started working together and finished college, and you didn't know I was a wrestling fan. And just one time, we both, I think I was watching like the Bray Wyatt debut, and you were like, oh my God, did you see it? It was Bray Wyatt. And I'm like, yes, he's fucking so cool. Look at him. Look at his fedora. I want it. And look at that sheep mask, I want it. And Luke Harper's beard, I just need it. That's where our sort of bond together started, as watching wrestling together. We would, the casino from our workplace, they would host some of the wrestling events, which me and you decided, you know what, yeah, let's go. Lose a bit of money and watch some wrestling, have some beer and some chicken.
Yeah, I used to get free tickets. It started with Super Bowl, didn't it? They used to come in and borrow video game consoles off our store. So then we got chatting to them. And then one day, I think it was the wrestling first, or it might have been boxing first. They said, we're doing these events more often. Someone had just taken over like their social side, trying to get more people in the door, especially on like Saturday, Sunday nights. It was a bit quieter. So we started going there. And we always have this debate, which was the first wrestling show we watched there. Was it WrestleMania or Royal Rumble?
I'm pretty sure it was Royal Rumble because we won a quiz.
I'm pretty sure it was either that year or the year after. We can never place it. We were drunk that night. That would be a running theme.
Yes.
Not so much now. We're a bit too old to be drinking and staying up watching wrestling. We were struggling this year's Royal Rumble because we were a bit tipsy. But yeah, it all came together and it was like, you like wrestling, I like wrestling. There was another couple of people who we could get to come with us. So it was a bit of a works out in. We had tables, I said, Super Bowl as well. So we'd do that. It was really good. And then that was like a staple then, especially for Rumble and for Mania for 2 or 3 years. 2 years, definitely.
Definitely 2 years, yeah, because onto it anyways. But Bray Wyatt's first WrestleMania was the first WrestleMania we watched together, which was WrestleMania 30. For many reasons, that's a sad WrestleMania, but also a very great WrestleMania as well.
Seeing a grown man cry.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people leave the casino that night.
It
was a wild night, but I remember Bray Wyatt's entrance and...
it's very good.
Although he should have won that match. But we'll get into that anyways later on.
We'll go through this a few times. Bray Wyatt's booking let him down quite a bit.
For non-fans, booking is the way that he is winning or losing a match, essentially.
Yeah, and you always go back to the very first pay-per-views you've watched, or PLEs as they are now. And I know Nitesh hates that.
I hate that word so much. It's a pay-per-view, always has been a pay-per-view.
It's a premium live event.
We'll get into this debate a lot throughout this whole podcast show.
They can't copyright pay-per-view, but PLE, they can copyright. So I always remember, unlike you who had dodgy copies on VHS, I had one Blu-ray or DVD at the time, WrestleMania 20. By default, that was my favourite pay-per-view because it was the only one I'd ever seen for quite a while. And then in the UK, it was always really weird. Sky box office would be £30 or £25 to watch an event. My parents would let me do that. I'd have to wait until there was highlights or there was a freebie. New Year's Revolution became a very highly rated review for me.
Oh, he said it.
It was free. Won a PLE back then. And then first Elimination Chamber on its own, as its own event, that was free. Always remember, I watched that and I was like, what is this? I hadn't seen it before. I'd seen like highlight clips of like the first one and then finally getting to watch one live. I'm sure I can go back and find out which one it was as well because things will pop into my brain. But it was really like, whoa, this is like a level above. Because it'd always been SmackDown, then it was a bit of Raw, seeing that going, oh, okay, so there's another show they talk about it, they show clips, and I found it. Can't watch it as easily. And then, we get to sometime in secondary school, basically stop watching for a bit. Probably one of the first downturns, and there was a few other things going on, like like school. And then I think everyone ebbs and flows out of it. Like at the minute, coming up to WrestleMania 40, everyone's watching weekly. There's clips everywhere. They're doing a very good job with getting YouTube stuff out really quickly.
Yeah, there's like a lot of marketing, but back then there was no social media. There was no watch this clip or watch this. Like YouTube was only just getting big. For me, it was like the magazines and we had the wrestling channel and stuff like that. Like I said, I never really had a phase where I stopped watching. I'd always know what was going on. Or I feel like more recently, I'm more tied in towards like the independent shows. So I don't watch the mainstream sort of wrestling, which is WWE or WWF to some fans if you're tuning in. Oh, what's wrestling? That's wrestling. Was always in the know. But that, once again, ties back to my whole family love it. We make it a known thing. Like, the weekend of WrestleMania coming up, you're coming to my house, my family are coming to my house, we're all watching it together as a big group gathering. We'll have our drinks, we'll have our, like, funny chats and reactions and whatnot. It just, now that we're older, it makes it more fun with everyone.
Arguably, as an adult watching it, it's a lot more fun than when I was a kid because there's people to talk about with it. There's one or two in secondary school that watched it and you went, you'd hear something or someone would say something, you'd be like, hey, I got you. I know what you're on about. And it was also a craze at one point to do an RKO to everybody. That wasn't even just wrestling fans. People were just doing that because it was fun. And that was like the first big breakout for me of, oh, okay, it's a bit more mainstream than you almost realise. Because it's not me, someone on the playground, you're not going, oh, do you want to pretend to be wrestlers? Yes, oh, it's a footballer. I want to kick a football around.
I was the total opposite. Yeah.
DDTing people in the playground.
Yes, we would play football, but like there was also that, oh, let's do a wrestling move. Oh, suplex me. Or, oh, I hit a pile driver on you. Something like that.
Yes, then you grow up a few years and I'm like, oh, okay, I've been more aware of finding things. It's easier to watch. And we'll get on to our favourite ever invention in a bit.
Punjabi prison match.
Do we network, my friend?
Oh, I thought it was a Punjabi prison.
Definitely not. No. So wrestling was a lot easier to find. It's a bit more approachable. It was easier to stay up and watch something if I wanted to watch it. I got into a very religious routine that I'd come back every Royal Rumble, at least watch that. And then that set my mood of how much going up forward up to Mania I'd watch. There was a few years where I was really checked out going, I'm not invested. I'm waiting for this to happen or something to grab me. And then they started introducing Fastlane, which really killed the mood quite a few years in a row, where it's like, this is just a filler to get people where they need to be.
Yeah.
But in a worse way than Elimination Chamber was doing. Elimination Chamber was still a highlight. That, for a few years, was my highlight of the wrestling calendar. Royal Rumble was always quite reliable. But then Elimination Chamber, there was something about it that just, I was like, I'm invested. And then you got to Mania and it was hit or miss every single time. It was, that was good, that was bad, that was terrible, that was good, that was meh, that was good, that was terrible. There was no consistency there for years.
But more than recently now, though, they've started to become more consistent at that period of time because I feel like they know that trend now of it's Mania season. People are going to start watching from the Royal Rumble onwards.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is probably the best time, like, that I can ever remember where there is a constant flow of, not interaction, there's like, people are invested, that's the word, invested in the story, in the wrestling, and just all in all, everything WWE-wise.
Yeah, and they're now trying to extend that back now to New Year, aren't they? They're trying to make that first Raw after the New Year a big event.
Yeah, I don't find that interesting in the slightest in my...
No, it's... But then again, I didn't for years realise how important the Raw after Mania was until a few years ago.
Yeah,
when there was one or two, like, oh, okay, this keeps you watching till SummerSlam.
Yeah, this is
in
the
my
story.
Head. I knew that. I knew that was the thing.
Yeah.
You have to reset or continue. But now it's a bit more in the back of my mind. I'm going, I can't wait for this weekend. But what's going to happen Monday?
Yeah, yeah. But that's what's in the back of your mind. Is who's coming? Yeah. What's the surprise? What's going to happen? I need to know. Yeah. And then you'll purposely stay up or watch it the day after, because we're in the UK. It's a late time to stay awake to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, I think this Mania will probably finish around about 5 a.m. We'll maybe probably still later. Be awake and a few drinks in us, but in the day, if I were to watch it on my own, I would not be up. I'd be asleep after the first hour and a half.
No. And I do appreciate I'm moving everything to Saturdays now. That's one of the best things I've ever done.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that. I wish AEW continued doing that.
Yeah, because TNA have done it, which I've only just found out recently.
Yeah.
Which now I'm going to go watch more of, because now I've got a reason to.
Exactly. We can stay up and watch it and talk about it. Because what are we doing right now?
Might be Sunday morning watching.
We're doing a podcast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything
wrestling? Yeah, we just get to spit everything out of our brains onto. Because we're quite good normally when watching, going, oh, I wonder if this will happen. I wonder if that will happen. In the realms of, we're looking at it from a story point of view, not a watching TV show. More like a, they've got to get to this point, they've got to get to that point, which is why this year's been a bit more wild with what we've watched. Go in, how are they factoring The Rock into this? Mm. Why doesn't it make sense? And then from going, it makes no sense to give me more.
Yeah, inject it in his veins, people.
Yeah, inject it in my veins.
Yeah.
Especially that new Rock entrance.
It's old music, multiple lightning strikes.
Cool. The fact that it's cool. It grows every single week. I don't know if they did that on purpose or someone keeps going, now add this, now add that.
It does.
That's a brief intro into how we've got into wrestling, how we've got back into wrestling. One of the big things that kicked off the whole WrestleMania season for us was the first WrestleMania with no fans.
Mm-hmm.
The whole COVID year. We watched that over Zoom. There was seven of us.
Yeah, we all watched it on Zoom because obviously we couldn't meet up with each other. All going back, thinking about it, someone should have shared their screen instead of having like that feedback of,
oh, we were all out of sync
in that.
So on one night, I was ahead. On Sunday, I was ahead. Saturday, I was behind.
Yeah.
So I was half not paying attention to what we're talking about because everyone was ahead of me. And then Sunday, I was ahead. So I was talking ahead of everybody. And then I was like, what are you on about? I'm like, wait for a minute.
And the way that they did their cinematic matches was just brilliant. Once again, the whole base of this episode is Bray Wyatt and an introduction to who we are and why we're doing it. But that Firefly Funhouse match was just chef's kiss.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hadn't, up until very recently, but around when Bray actually died, I hadn't seen his match with Awakened Matt Hardy.
Awakened.
The Ultimate Deletion match.
Oh, that was brilliant.
And that was incredible.
If that didn't get an Oscar that year, nothing deserved an Oscar that year.
Yeah. And then I watched it back recently, just after this. As soon as we finished watching this documentary, I was like, I need to feel good about myself here. So I put on the Five Funhouse match and then followed it up with that. And that cleansed your soul and made you appreciate Bray Wyatt even more.
Yeah, I agree. It was that lawnmower scene, wasn't it? Where being chased by a slow lawnmower.
It should have been the most corny going, what am I watching? But I had a smile on my face throughout the whole thing.
And that was just like the Five Funhouse match as well, though, wasn't it? It was like, this is just insane, but why am I invested?
Why is this working?
Is the coolest thing. Yeah, why is it working? Oh my God, there's a heel Cena. It's great. Yeah, no, Bray Wyatt was just something different. Just his whole character. Going back to my childhood, they were the characters. There were Undertaker, there was Kane, there was Sting, there was Mankind, there was the Ministry of Darkness. Yes, it scared me a lot as a kid, and for some reason my family would put the Undertaker's theme song on in pitch black and I would cack myself from it, but I really do appreciate that dark kind of character in wrestling now. And
yeah, definitely.
They did it so smart, like how they were bringing Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family in to like the WWE. It was working on NXT, which I wasn't watching back then as much.
I don't think anyone was.
No. Because it just, NXT failed. Like, a bit of background on Bray Wyatt, he was on the second season of that whole Tough Enough NXT thing where he was Husky Harris and Cody Rhodes was his mentor, and it just didn't work. After the whole Nexus thing, that second season just didn't work. And they brought in Husky Harris and they just didn't know what to do with him. And yes, he was a big kind of guy, but in wrestling, bigger men are great. They just don't know how to use them.
No, it is, yeah. And he's not your superstar, as people would say.
No.
He's not your typical guy. I was going to say Big Show then. He's not like Big Show. He's not. Now we've got Roman Reigns. You've got some other people.
Yeah.
Cody Rhodes. Even though Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns are very good at embodying their characters, they're not. They're more superstar-like.
Yeah. To use yeah, WWE they're term. They're like a big draw, aren't they? They're someone yeah. that's what is going to sell. You're going to sell all of this. You're going to toys. You're going to sell figures. You're going to sell T-shirts. Husky Harris was not going to do that at all.
No, and even like original Bray Wyatt, you look at him and you go, you show that to anyone else, yeah. you're like, it's a guy.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a guy. He's not yeah. changing the landscape of WWE. And WWE back then is probably when you weren't really paying much attention to it.
And I was in and out, so yeah. the T-shirt I've got on now is from SummerSlam 2015. Yes, 2015. Hang on, it's written on it. Yeah, 2015. I got my facts right. I was into watching an Arrow TV show and they were doing the whole Cody Rhodes, Stephen Amell bit. And that was SummerSlam. And that SummerSlam was the weekend of a music festival in the UK. And I was there with a Bray Wyatt hat on.
Yes, yes. She sent a picture with me.
Straw hats were in that year.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've got back into wrestling a little bit. I like Bray Wyatt. Let's go with this.
Yeah.
And so I'm there at the music fest, walk around Bray Wyatt hat on, and there's not that many people pointing out, going, hey, I understand that, I get that reference. One of the lads I was with did, and we come back after the Sunday night, and I put on SummerSlam on my phone and was watching that, just about had a good signal to watch it with the WWE Network, which just, that got me back in. As stupid as it sounds, it was so much easier to watch everything.
Yeah, the
if
whole
I was watching
catalog.
Raw live, which we did a few times, for a while, the network had the ad break bits on.
Yeah, oh my God. That's
that
like
last
a
long.
Blast from the past. Yeah,
that
like,
was great.
Because they wouldn't put the live shows on the network, but
no,
you'd watch it on, like, for instance, once again, we're in the UK, so we had Sky Sports, which had WWE showings on, and whenever I'd stay up to watch Raw at 1 o'clock in the morning, when it go into an ad break, that's when I'm like, oh, I'm so tired, I'm going to probably fall asleep. But they did that cool thing of, oh, you've got the network now, just watch what's going on whilst the ad break's on.
Yeah, so you'd have Sky Sports on the TV watching, and as soon as it goes to an ad break, I'd have my tablet on next to me, and it would automatically kick in, because you'd
yeah.
be on there waiting. It'd yeah, be yeah. on the screen, and it'd kick in and go, oh, now we're here on the network, watch that, and it was really cool.
Yeah.
And that kind of got me more invested because it was easier to consume it.
Yeah.
Again, back then, YouTube wasn't as big as it is now.
No.
YouTube's their like second network, if you like. And Bray Wyatt was doing all the vignettes and all the clips that were showing up on Raw back then, and they were just captivating.
Yeah, it worked. It was like the little teasers and stuff like that, which what just Bray Wyatt did so well was
yeah.
the little teasers.
When you're seeing this documentary and you're looking at it, it just looked like they were having so much fun behind the scenes with Eric Rowan, Luke Harper. They just looked like they were having a ball. And
yeah.
then you go back and watch one of them and they're like the most serious, bloodthirsty, psychopathic cult members ever. Eric yeah. Rowan's wearing a sheep mask.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw that going, yeah, okay.
I thought, I was like, I want that sheep mask. That was the first thing I could think of. Was like, that would scare so many people on Halloween.
I'm glad the hat came in time, or else I was going to take a sheet mask to this music festival. Probably would have been arrested.
Yeah. And then it just turned out like they debuted on Raw, and just like that whole lantern as well. Like, I wish I was into like sort of cosplaying and stuff, because Bray Wyatt would be the perfect sort of character. Like, his lantern.
Indian Bray
and,
Wyatt. I'd pay for.
Be it, you be Bray Wyatt, I'll be Luke Harper or Eric Rowan with the sheet mask.
I'm more Braun Strowman build.
Are you?
Yeah, definitely.
Which then, but obviously, yeah, they brought in the Black Sheep later down the line as well.
He was a scary dude when he got introduced.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember seeing him in the ring with Roman Reigns. And at the point, Roman Reigns was like one of the biggest guys on TV. Like, he looked the part, he was built. He had that silly bulletproof jacket on. But at that point, it was like, he's the muscle. And then all of a sudden, there's like, oh, they have got somebody to overshadow him.
Yeah. I always knew him as one of the Rosebuds. He would just have that distinctive look. And I was like, oh, it's that guy. But now he's been like possessed by Bray Wyatt or something like that. It was just, I thought they should have kept it as the three, but obviously Luke Harper got injured and things like that. They need that dynamic. It worked really well. Like, the Wyatt family came in at the perfect time, because that's when the Shield were in as well. And the Shield was something new. That was a great feud. Like, what they did coming up to, I think it was before WrestleMania 30, funnily enough, they did that little feud. Just that standoff between, like, they're both on each side of the, like, ring, and they all stand up and just, like, it was such a good match. And
yeah, and one of the first Shield losses.
Yeah, Bray got the pinfall, which was smart booking.
On Roman,
yeah.
Yeah, Harper took a spear or something, didn't he?
Yeah.
I just remember watching it at the time going, that's so smart. Even back then, I weren't really thinking, going, that is good booking, that is protecting both of them, whatever you'd say. However you think now, as a 2024 internet-enabled fan.
Yeah.
Back then, it was still going, how does this work out? Because by rights, neither side should win. They should just all collapse in the ground.
Yeah, it should have been like a draw or something like that to keep them
but
both.
But then they had
strong.
The whole Luke Harper comes in to take the spear, and Bray Wyatt,
Sister Abigail,
wins it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love Sister Abigail move.
Yeah.
The whole premise of showing that kiss on the forehead. Oh, it's just incredible.
It was something
the
different.
The way he moved around the ring, the spider walk, the way he bent himself back with ropes.
Yeah.
The way he did his clotheslines. As I said, he looked like a normal bloke to most people. And there he is in the ring with Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns looking the part.
Yeah. Yeah. It worked. Like, going back to like him being the bigger guy, he slimmed down quite a bit. But he could still move in that ring, being one like big sort of wrestler. And that, once again, Luke Harper as well, fantastic in the ring. Like, his clothesline is probably better than JBL's clothesline, in my personal opinion.
Oh, it's up there. It's definitely up there. Yeah. If you have Mount Rushmore, as people are saying recently, of
clotheslines.
Yeah.
There's
and
only
I've
two.
Always been a fan of... there might be three or four.
Mm.
One day we might get there. Yeah, they'll work together. And it just enhanced everybody. But Bray Wyatt was like the driving force behind a lot of it. In the documentary, it said he wanted to be in a on-screen family with his actual brother, Bo Dallas. And even though that would have worked, because Bo Dallas is quite talented as well, the whole hillbilly look of the other two adding into it just...
Yeah, because Bo Dallas was doing his own sort of like thing, and he was like Bo leaving.
I still look back and find that too cringy.
Yeah. All you got to do is Bo leave. And then smile. Yeah.
And you've got... It was also because that era was the wet hair, muscly...
Long hair.
It almost looked like all three of them come out of the indie scene. Not to disparage the indie scene or anything, but it was like, that's not a WWE product. And now looking back at it, it's a Triple H product.
Like, yeah, because
he leaves it, he helps.
The only person that I know from the indie scene was Brody Lee or Luke Harper. Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas were in FCW. I never saw it. It was like
nobody could see it.
Nobody could see it. It was their developmental sort of thing. It was new to me, but I know what you mean by the whole everyone had that look.
Yeah, everyone had a certain look and everyone had long wet hair so they could do the flip.
Yeah.
And throw the head back and it'd look amazing. And
why do you think I've grown my hair up? Because exactly. When I become a wrestler, I'll just wet it and then it will just make it look
wrestlers cool. At 30. Start training now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other end of that spectrum, which was the next big feud that was mentionable, was the Cena feud. And Cena at that point was getting to the stage of, oh God, not again.
Yeah. Here we go. Cena's going to win, or Cena's going to destroy another up and coming superstar.
Yeah. Or the right person is not going to win on the night because it's John Cena.
Yeah.
And it's, you look back at it now and you go, actually, John Cena was special and he is good, but he was over pushed, over in your face.
Down our throats. That's what it was. And can wrestle. Yes, he only has his five moves of doom and whatnot. But if you watch some of his earlier stuff, he was great. He could move, he could wrestle. Not saying that he can't wrestle now, he can, but it was just that whole he doesn't want to lose sort of thing.
Because he's and it was almost like if he lost, the shirt sales and the toy sales go down.
Yeah.
Which, I can't remember if it was around the, CM Punk was definitely up there before this period, but nobody was getting near what Cena was selling merchandise was, and it seemed like they were too scared.
Yeah, they were too scared to go outside of the box sort of thing.
Yeah.
But then you can clearly see that Bray Wyatt was that outside of the box sort of person.
Yeah. I mean, I hadn't bought wrestling merch since my mom and dad bought me figures when I was playing with toys at that age. And now it was getting to...
We're working.
We're working. I probably had one, maybe two wrestling video games since. I had Here Comes the Pain, SmackDown versus Raw. I want to say maybe 2011. And then...
Yeah, because we started playing it online about 13, 14.
Yeah, that would have been about right. And then I've recently touched a 2K one and gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
We'll try the current one at some point, I'm sure.
But and that's then, what got you the merch, wasn't it? You bought the Bray Wyatt hat.
Yeah, so that was the first bit of merch I'd probably bought myself outside of a video game ever. And then I had the networks, so I was paying for that.
Paying for that?
Yeah.
Were you paying for that?
I had it for like the first 6 months.
Because
remember, you had to sign up for so long.
Hmm.
When you first got it, you couldn't have it for a month. So we both signed up at the same time. So I had it for, I want to say I had it for about, 6 months, cancelled it, and then got it back for the following Mania season.
Did you get it back or did you use mine?
I did. I had it at least twice before I started using yours.
I'm calling bull BS.
No, I definitely had it for two Manias and then, I started using yours. And then we started watching it and yours, so I never needed it again.
Yeah.
Then, I'm trying to think. I paid for it over COVID because you couldn't share. COVID when we were doing that one. The first time all six or seven of us watching it all had it on our own accounts.
You can't watch it together and we want to watch it together or talk about it together. Yeah. So we need our own sort of stream of it. Yeah.
We're watching Bray Wyatt. That's what got us back into you. Well, you had never stopped watching it, but
it got us talking a lot more and see Bray Wyatt's entrance or, oh, look how cool Bray Wyatt did this. Yeah, I have the memory of John Cena throwing the steel steps at Bray Wyatt and just the way that Bray Wyatt just took it on the head. I rewinded and watched that multiple times at work.
Yeah. And that was very much the way they should have got John Cena over with people and pushed him, because that storyline of him, Bray Wyatt trying to break him, was brilliant. Some of the best promos from both of them, really, they'd both ever done.
Yeah. But also prior to that, Bray Wyatt headed the Daniel Bryan Yes movement and stuff, because they made Bryan a part of the Wyatt family, and he turned on Bray Wyatt, and just that loudest Yes chant in that steel cage is what gave Bryan that win at WrestleMania 30. So it's like swings and roundabouts. Bray Wyatt can make people look good.
Yeah, that whole charisma he had and the mystique of the character was a good light, also a vehicle for people to... Because Daniel Bryan's a great wrestler, was back then, is now. Mm-hmm. However, he, again, is not a WWE superstar. He don't look the part.
He doesn't look the part, yeah.
Small, you know, whatever people said about him at the time. And that's what made people, some people gravitate towards him, but a lot of people didn't know what it was. And yeah, it was that story really helped elevate. And yeah, it was, yeah, it was the same Mania, wasn't it, 30?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The three big moments, wasn't it? The streak. Bray. Well, it should have been Bray Wyatt.
Should have been Bray Wyatt, yeah. We'll get to
Bray
that
Wyatt
now.
Should have won.
We'll get to that now.
The entrance was fantastic.
Got the band to play the entrance and coming down with the lantern. The fireflies, like, wasn't as many fireflies, but, like...
Yeah, that was the time for Cena to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Give him a 3-4 month break, let him do whatever he needed.
Don't even give him the break. Just lose and then win at the next pay-per-view or something. Give someone the WrestleMania moment.
But I would have liked to see Cena go away, let other people build up. Even if it was just for one pay-per-view, have Cena come back that pay-per-view. Or just after.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't seem to have any time off for nearly 10 years, Cena.
Yeah.
Incredible, really.
It was only a certain amount of injuries, but then even that, he'd come back.
He was a Superman.
Yeah. Going forward about Bray Wyatt was... He was that good and scary. People like The Undertaker wanted to work with him.
Yeah, and that was following Mania.
Yeah, he could just lost his streak at 30. We thought he died. It was a sad day, that WrestleMania 30. But then he come back and he was... Did he shave his head again? Or he started growing out his hair again, didn't he? Because prior to that, he was bald. Taker started growing his hair out.
Yeah, he had the mohawk for 30, didn't he?
Yeah, and then he had the normal, like, old school...
It started to grow out, but it weren't out. Well, it was obviously because it's only been a year.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't have got... He weren't going to have length hair by
No. Even but I can't do that.
But 31 was interesting because it was in... It hadn't quite gotten dark yet, which I remember going, why? Both of their entrances for 30 were incredible.
Yeah.
They were arguably equal to each other with how good they were.
Yeah.
Because everyone really likes the fireflies, having the lights on. And then having the lantern, blowing the lantern out, it is as iconic, nearly as iconic. If it had gone on for many more years, it would have been to the Undertaker's dong.
Yeah, and the way that Undertaker brings the lights up. But you can't really do that in an outside stadium.
Not at 6 p.m. or whatever it was.
Mm.
And it was, I think by the end of the match, it was about getting ready for the perfect time.
Yeah, yeah, they should have done it a few matches later.
Yeah, but 31's card was quite stacked and I don't know. I can't remember how close it was to that main event now.
No, I don't think it was very close at all. It was like in the middle.
Yeah. So yeah, it was 31 was the time they did it. It was a good match. Could that have been the one to end the streak? My heart says yes.
Should have been.
If they were going to do it. Yeah.
But
there's a few other occasions that you're like, maybe that's the end of the streak there. We'll go into it in more details, but like the Roman Reigns, for as much as he was hated back then, when it came to his turn to face the Undertaker, that arguably would have been much bigger if he broke the streak then to Lesnar.
Yeah.
Lesnar was a vehicle and a beast, definitely meant saying that then.
He's the biggest vehicle beast going.
Yeah. But so 31, he tangles with Taker. And he just looked impressive. He says it in the documentary, Undertaker, or Mark Calloway, as he's presented in this, because the Undertaker's no more. He even says that it helps him with getting his feet back under, because 30 against Lesnar, he had a massive concussion.
Yeah.
Can't remember the match.
Can't remember.
If you ever watch his Last Ride documentary, which is another great WWE documentary, they knock him out of the park.
Yeah.
More often than not. He goes through the whole rebuilding his like mojo for that year, and how even just before the match, like Triple H pulls Undertaker aside and says to him, "You're the Undertaker, go out there and do this."
Yeah.
To like, because he could see the almost of fear in his eyes. And then Bray Wyatt like dances with him through that match, and it looks impressive. Undertaker looked impressive compared to, I never noticed at the time watching WrestleMania 30 how like out of touch or injured or concussed Undertaker was.
Yeah, because we wouldn't have seen it live. It's when you watch it again and you're like, ah,
yeah,
I see it. Like Bray Wyatt, like going back to 31, Bray Wyatt must have been nervous as heck, like wrestling maybe his idol. Like,
yeah,
his old demeanor is I'm the darkness. I'm this generation's Undertaker sort of thing.
He wants to be the next generation Undertaker.
Yeah.
If it weren't for his booking, he probably would have been.
Yeah, 100%.
He wouldn't have had to also cut leader Bray Wyatt as much as he did.
Yeah.
You go to next WrestleMania, 32, and he's injured, yet he still gets that segment with The Rock. Who does he end up wrestling? He ends up in a squash match with...
The Rock ends up beating Eric Rowan in one of the quickest matches of WrestleMania history.
Yeah, because Harper and Bray's both injured.
Yeah, and you can show, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's wearing his apron and that, I remember.
Yeah.
Why The Rock was there, I actually don't know, for 32.
Yeah.
He'd been there for 30. I think it was 32 the one with all the injuries, wasn't it?
It was with all their injuries, but it was like... the biggest WrestleMania in history.
Yeah,
over 100,
and everything
fans.
Went wrong. It was like the revenge tour of you're making us change the bookings. You've made us make Bryan win. 31, to be fair. 31 was just a solid decision to have Seth Rollins cash in.
Yeah.
And then 32, Rollins is injured.
Who else was there?
Everyone's injured. But everyone wrong wins, don't they? It's AJ Styles loses his first ever match. If you watch WrestleMania 32, which I never did, I didn't watch it at the time. I feel like I did, but I didn't really notice how bad it was. But every booking decision and that thing should have been like reversed, and it would have made more sense.
And people were losing. If you want us to do an episode on that, we can. I can't remember it.
We will, because recently I've went back and been like, what is the worst WrestleMania ever? You know, when it comes up during like YouTube and the algorithms chuck whatever at you.
Yeah.
And it come up and I was watching a few other people's videos. If I remember them, I'd shout them out. They're much bigger YouTubers than we're going to be. And they're like, WrestleMania 32 is the worst WrestleMania ever. And I went, is it? And then you go back and go, yeah, they're right.
Yeah, they're right.
It might well be.
Yeah.
Not that the product's bad. The wrestling's good, but the decisions made around it.
Mm.
And some of it's avoidable. Some of it's not. Some of it is, as I said, the injuries, like 4 or 5 big names are out for it.
Yeah.
And then you've got 3 or 4, the matches will go the wrong decision. But yeah, that's his segment there. And then they like, okay, that's a stumble. He was injured, maybe shouldn't have been there. He had a great match against Taker, but lost. He had a great match against Cena, but lost.
Although, arguably,
what they do next. And then I don't know how soon afterwards, if it's the next Elimination Chamber, he wins his first belt.
Yeah, and it was a WWE Championship, wasn't it?
Yeah, in the Elimination Chamber.
Because they were going into the story with Orton at Mania for that year.
I'm trying to remember who was champ. I think Cena was champ. I might be wrong. I'm writing down the notes for that because this is a Bray Wyatt episode, not a John Cena episode.
No, but we've talked about John Cena quite a bit.
He comes up quite a bit. Yeah. To be fair, Bray Wyatt was John Cena's nemesis for a good portion of those late stages.
We ain't even got to like the best John Cena Bray Wyatt interaction.
Yeah. So he got that belt. And then I'm trying to think then. Where does he go? Yeah. So it's Elimination Chamber, he wins his first belt. It's not a very memorable title run.
No, because it was that whole recruiting Randy Orton to the Wyatt family.
Yeah, and they won the tag belts.
They won the tag belts. Then he won the WWE Championship.
Yeah.
And then Orton chose him, because I'm sure Orton won the Royal Rumble.
So yeah, he has WrestleMania 32 against The Rock, and then it goes into a confronting Randy Orton. So it's Backlash. Was it Backlash? Yeah. Backlash was like their first proper bit of feud.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you get to Survivor Series. They're involved in that. I think at some point as well, Kane's involved in the feud, if I remember rightly.
It started to come back to me now, yeah, because he was feuding with Kane and then Kane.
Yeah.
Cause,
and then
yeah,
Survivor Series that year is the last two, I think, is Wyatt and Orton.
Yeah.
For SmackDown. And then they're there. And there's a couple of cool bits there, and that kind of is a bit more, oh, okay, this might be friendly. And then Elimination Chamber was the one where White wins it, WWE Championship, defeats Cena. Oh, here's a game for her. Cena was in there. AJ Styles was in there because he catches the forearm.
To win the title.
Yeah, to win it.
Yes, yeah.
Dean Ambrose was in it.
Yeah.
I can't remember the other two.
They're not that important.
No, the other two aren't important. No. It's probably somebody...
Jobbers.
You know what? It's going to be someone who's still in the company, isn't it?
Let's play the game. Fans, if you put the comments in of who the... We're going to guess the two wrestlers. Tell us if we're wrong. I'm going to say... So who was in it? AJ, Cena.
Yeah.
Ambrose.
Dean Ambrose.
Orton.
You're going with Orton?
And, who was in wrestling that time?
I'm going to guess R-Truth, but I don't think that's right.
The Miz.
The Miz, you're going to guess The Miz?
Yeah.
That's a good shout.
Daniel Bryan.
I feel like Daniel Bryan probably doing something else back then. But yeah,
Kane?
I'm going to go R-Truth, you go Miz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome Truth.
You're right and I'm wrong. Yeah. Awesome Truth, yeah. Yeah, so he wins the belt. I can remember it. People will learn not long into this podcast. I don't remember a lot of facts. For these episodes, I'll write things down. Like this bit I haven't written down because we were just talking Bray Wyatt. But I remember how I felt about an event, WrestleMania 30, 31. But the odd bit, like Seth Rollins cashing in will stay with me to the day I die because it's one of my favourite moments ever. And that arguably made me re-love wrestling as much as I did when I was younger.
Yeah.
But that's a story for another time. But this, I remember Bray Wyatt catching AJ, phenomenal forearm. Because generally, most people didn't think Bray was going to win.
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Everyone was like, oh, yeah, John Cena's going to retain. No, he's not. Okay, who else could do it? Dean Ambrose, I don't think, was quite...
He was the former champion before. And like,
yeah, but he weren't on that kind of... He weren't that far in the race, was he, at that point?
No, he's not as who he is now as much.
You had probably AJ Styles and John Cena were the front runners.
Yeah.
And then you had Ambrose and Wyatt quite a bit back. And then him catching him, doing this to Abigail, and it's like, he's won it.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3. Yeah. And they're like,
what the fuck? Like, how?
Yeah. Like, oh, my God, he's finally done it.
It was a shock. He deserved it. He deserved it.
And then, so they'd already done the whole, after Survivor Series... Randy Orton stood in for Harper when he was injured.
Yeah.
For a tag match when they had tag titles. But then they did, the Orton wins the Rumble. And then what's he going to do with it? Oh, I'll pledge not to fight Bray Wyatt and his family.
Yeah, we're family.
Yeah, before Vin Diesel made it cool. And then he, WrestleMania 33, man. Bray Wyatt doesn't win again.
Did he have a win at WrestleMania?
I don't know. We might find out as we go through this.
Yeah, he did.
No, it's probably close not to. Oh, no, technically he does. The best one of the lap. Technically he wins that one.
You're not wrong.
I'm not wrong, no. But yeah, Bray Wyatt's career at this point, that's the pinnacle at that point.
He's hit the top and now he's like kind of plateaued.
Well, you say that. He then goes on to have the best match because isn't this then following on to the Deleter of Worlds match?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, but...
Not long. It's that year. I can't remember when.
It is that year, but you go from, like, the WWE champion
to losing at Mania.
Losing at Mania to then becoming a nobody and your brother, who no offense, Bo Dallas, that character wasn't the best. He was in the B team, yeah. And like the B team were getting over. Yes, they're getting over. That's fine. Not a problem. All for it. I believe whenever I can. But Bray Wyatt should have been the top, like, he should main have, event match.
Arguably, he should have been undefeated as a heel, mm-hmm. which is saying something. He should have been that mythical supernatural force that just wasn't losing. Or if he did lose, it weren't his fault.
Yeah.
Somebody cheated. Because he loses also at some point in this run. He loses against the Demon King, Finn Balor.
Yeah, because he goes into a feud. Once again, it's like mid-card feuds. And yes, Demon Balor deserves to win because Demon Balor is good.
Again, but that's again, another character's misbooked.
It's misbooking. And yes, wrestling is theatre and there is going to be a winner and a loser, but pick the right person.
Yeah. Like, but then arguably the Demon and Bray Wyatt should never have actually had to cross paths.
No.
Should have navigated that around.
Yeah, and once again, they were both that big of an entity. Should have been a draw.
Yeah. It should have, the ring should have caught fire or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. The ref should have stopped the Hell in a Cell match between them.
The ref should have just stopped.
Yeah, the ref should have collapsed from fear and no one would go in there.
I'm scared of the Demon. I'm scared of Bray Wyatt. Oh, I don't want to be a part of this.
You can see in the documentary, and you see it at the time, he has the feud with Matt Hardy that works. He stumbles against a few people. And then they do... Well, the whole reason the Matt Hardy feud ends the way it does is because Bray Wyatt was getting stale as a character. He weren't having fun. The documentary does a really good job of showing this, by the way, is going from
Bray Wyatt being Bray happy. Wyatt to just just get rid of, like...
And they don't shy away from much either.
No.
Obviously, no one knows all the details, but they go through the fact that he separated from his wife, he got a new girlfriend. They don't just gloss over everything. No. They do shine some light there.
But just remember, these videos are from the WWE archives.
Oh, every 5 minutes. Me and him were sitting there watching it going, I'm about to burst into tears. And then this is from the archive. Flashes on the screen for the sixth time. I'm like, okay, don't need to cry now. Yeah. So he goes in the lake at the end of Ultimate Deletion, which is one of the best matches you'll ever see. Yep. The Lake of Reincarnation or Rebirth?
The Lake of Reincarnation.
That was brilliant.
Yeah.
And then he takes a bit of a break. I say a bit of a break. It's nigh on a year, isn't it?
Quite a long time.
They said it in the documentary. I didn't realise it was as long as it was. It's from like midsummer 18 to from spring.
Yeah.
April something, 2019. Yeah. He comes back and he arguably outdoes
everything.
The Bray Wyatt character. Yeah. He just outdoes it straight away. I don't know if it's inherently better, but the first Firefly Funhouse you sent me as a clip, and I went, what am I watching?
No one understood it. And I was like, this is fantastic.
Like, I just didn't know what was going on. I was like, because I don't think the first one was very subtle with the whole The Fiend concept coming out.
So the first few episodes, he didn't tease The Fiend. It was more, let him in, or let me in. So
what's he going to do kind of thing? Look. And then it builds up to you hearing The Fiend, because he's there to protect happy, jolly Bray Wyatt. And it's brilliant.
It is.
How he wrestles in that mask, I don't know. How anybody wrestles in a mask like that. Shadors, you can understand when they've got a mask on. Rey Mysterio, Dragon Lee. The two big ones at the main WWE. It's you can see their eyes. You put the Fiend mask on, and it's his eyes. Are Five Nights at Freddy.
Yeah, what is it? Because there's a lot of like burn. It's like rubber or rubble, whatever. He must be sweating. He must be like dehydrated in that mask.
Yeah,
but
and then he could just the whole some of the promos. If you've never seen them, go back and watch. A playlist of Firefly Funhouse. And then, at the same time, go back and watch the very first few cool Bray Wyatt family members of them. And you're like, this is the same person. It's great.
Yeah.
Like, you've got Mr. Rogers and you've got
Husky Harris and, like, the Rambling Rabbit. And everything was just, like, bits of Bray Wyatt or bits of his past,
yeah,
all then brought into what he's currently doing now, which I think is a good way of him reinventing himself without actually reinventing himself.
Yeah, and he comes back, he's still using Sister Abigail, he uses the Mandible Claw, which is genius as well.
Yeah.
And they booked him quite smartly, if I remember, at the beginning, because it was Finn Balor, and
Finn Balor, just a little.
Just the Sister Abigail a few times on him, Mandible Claw, and he's back as a big heel. Mm-hmm. And
he comes out as the Fiend, and the Fiend's first entrance, you're like,
yeah,
this is great. His entrance was great as normal Bray Wyatt, but the Fiend entrance was Bray Wyatt on whatever drug I can think of.
Yeah, so that was, I don't know when he came out as the Fiend. That was a couple of months in, wasn't it? They'd built him up a bit.
He did a tease. He come out and attacked Finn Balor, but then his first big entrance was at SummerSlam.
With a Balor match, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he goes into the, I alluded to it earlier with the Hell in a Cell getting stopped. But it goes into his Universal Championship feud with Seth Rollins. And, I love both men. It hurts me to bring this up. But one of the worst things ever. Mm-hmm. You all know Hell in a Cell can't be stopped. It's pinfall or submission. And the referee stopped it because the Fiend gets buried under some weapons.
Yeah.
With that weird red light and the red
that
cage.
That red light.
The red light worked in some occasions, but with red Hell in a Cell, definitely didn't work.
It didn't work for me.
Yeah. But yeah, so that it arguably his lowest point of the booking, and that did quite a bit of damage, really. But he eventually wins the belt.
At the Saudi show.
Yeah, they're not really close together.
Because everyone complained that much at how shit that Hell in a Cell match was. They're like, we have to give him the title.
Yeah, you wouldn't have, because he couldn't lose that quickly, really. No. So they had to do some kind of clever finish, they tried.
Yeah.
But again, it's just, they dropped the ball with him. He, no fault of his own, really.
No.
He's playing the character fantastically. Everyone's invested. They do that bad finish, so they have to right the wrong in the Crown Jewel event.
Yeah.
Which, if I remember rightly, was good a match. I did enjoy it. Could tell you what happens in it.
I just remember him standing tall with the Universal Championship.
That is a great picture.
Yeah.
He had the weird belt with his face on.
Yeah, the Fiend belt. Yeah.
I didn't like that. Still don't like it.
Yeah.
I understand why they did it, but he had a Firefly Funhouse one as well, did he? Or
no.
Did he have a standard one and the Fiend one?
Yeah.
Depending on who was carrying it.
Yeah.
Was it still blue strap back then, wasn't it?
So this was when they then did a brand split because WWE went on Fox.
Yeah.
And then Bray Wyatt, because he was selling loads of merch and whatnot, he was like the first sort of pick.
Yeah.
At SmackDown.
And then, there's quite a bit of a trend with The Fiend, really. You have a really good decision, beats Finn Balor. Really bad decision, Hell in a Cell. Really good decision, wins the belt in Saudi. I still think Hell in a Cell was the worst decision, but then it gets to February Super, what do they call it? Super Showdown?
Yeah.
Yeah, Super Showdown. And Goldberg decides he wants the belt.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, Goldberg.
Yeah, absolute squish.
Yeah.
I have brief bullet points, but on my screen, that's why I can remember. I didn't write down the show, though, so if I got Super Showdown wrong, I apologise. But
no, Goldberg beats Goldberg,
Goldberg comes in, beats him. And then, if this is off the top of my head, so I might be wrong, either just after it or the following month, it goes back into John Cena, doesn't it?
Well, COVID happens.
Yeah, but it goes from Goldberg beating him, squishing him, to I'm going to feud with John Cena.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try and
I'm not going to win my title back. Yeah, I'm not going to
build up to,
I'm just going
to
forget about
if they squished him and then they build it back up to Mania, and he goes on absolutely hammers Goldberg.
Yeah.
You could forgive it a little bit, but the fact that they squished arguably one of the characters they should have been building up the most to squish him, a travesty, really.
It was.
But again, all his character work during all this is fantastic. I don't know how the man felt himself.
It's the higher ups.
Yeah.
Remember, wrestling is theatre to me. Wrestling is Dungeons and Dragons. It's
for blokes.
Well, yes,
we are blokes that also play Dungeons and Dragons. But
it is an adventure with fighting.
Yeah, and I'm one of these people. I want to see what happens. I won't get upset at the time something happens. Take a loss to streak. I weren't the person in the casino I was watching crying. Nitesh wasn't either. But a couple of days later, I'm going, don't sit right with me.
Yeah, even when you have time to digest it, you're like,
yeah. And then you appreciate what comes next. So you look at the Raw. He doesn't appear rightly. He's concussed. Okay, so there's not an immediate payoff. You get to the summer when he jumps like Brock Lesnar. There's a bit of payoff there, a bit of storytelling. You've got it now. The Bray Wyatt situation with ease, you don't get.
There's no payoff. There's no story. Yeah, because he's jumping from feud to feud, essentially.
Yeah. But they managed to tie this John Cena one into back to the original, which was a very smart decision.
Yeah, it kind of went full circle, right?
Yeah. And this was. I do remember at this point I weren't watching as much wrestling as other people. So I think I'd watched Hell in a Cell match. Was it a Clash at Castle? I didn't watch Super Showdown, but then when I found out he won it, I actually watched it like a few days later.
Yeah, you're like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Oh, I'm going to watch this now.
Yeah.
And then, I watched him win the belt against Rollins. Then I watched Super Showdown a few days after he lost it again. So I'm like, oh man, back in the dumps. That he's challenged Cena, start watching it to build up to Mania again. And that this Mania, I was very hot and cold on build up to it.
Well, it was COVID. There wasn't much to do.
We're both off work going, well, I'm going to watch both nights. And that was a brilliant feeling that, they're giving us two nights of Mania.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was announced ahead of time, or at least I weren't aware that Firefly Funhouse was going to be a cinematic.
We didn't know it was going to be cinematic, but we knew it was going to be the Firefly Funhouse match.
Yeah.
And my God, I'll go back to what I said earlier in the episode. Chef's kiss.
Yeah. The whole John Cena. I don't know if it's the fact he's taken acting lessons and gone to Hollywood, but every time he talks about this recently, he's been on the documentary, he was on the Chris Van Vliet podcast, he's been on a few other bits and bobs where he's got sound bites of him talking about Wyatt and this match. He just paints such a good picture of working with him and the back and forth. And then when you watch it, like I said, I went back to watch it after I saw the documentary because I needed something to pick me up, and it's just genius.
And the fact that they said in the documentary they have 2 days to
edit it, and
my God.
And John Cena wrote down most of it, like what he wanted to get in on him. And then Bray Wyatt was riffing off of that and really coming on board with bits. There's a Husky Harris joke that's still brilliant about John Cena being able to carry the weight when he's doing the rap bit.
Yeah, when he was doing his Get Fugonomics gimmick. And then when John Cena is now a part of the New World Order as the Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bray Wyatt being Eric Bischoff.
Yeah.
Was just great. And it just gives you a big smile on your face. And then COVID, I didn't really watch much wrestling after Mania.
No, I didn't. I watched wrestling. I didn't watch WWE. I watched AEW because they had fans.
Yeah. And the whole weird screen with with WWE weren't quite right.
It didn't sit right with me either.
No, I recently showed my partner, I showed her the Becky segment because she's seen me through osmosis watching. So she knows Cody Rhodes, she hates the song. She knows Seth Rollins because I'll watch everything Seth Rollins does. And she knows Becky Lynch because the whole build-up to a Rhea Ripley match. Just gone. So I showed her that clip of her after Money in the Bank going, I'm pregnant. Oscar, you've won the belt. And I didn't realise how cringe it comes across until I rewatched it with her going, the whole feeling's here that I wanted her to see and get the surprise. But not having fans there makes it such a sad moment going. The fans were there for that. which is quite a lot. The Fiend doesn't work, to bring it back to Bray Wyatt. The Fiend doesn't work with no fans.
No, it doesn't, because the Firefly Funhouse does, but the Fiend doesn't. Because he does needs a few, the atmosphere.
Yeah, he does a few matches where every wrestler kind of got showed up a little bit for how much the fans make the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're all good performers, they're all great entertainers, but without the fans, without some of the camera work that they do, like, it was a struggle to watch during the lockdown. I don't think anyone goes back and goes, you know what, I'm going to watch.
I'm going to watch.
So I think I tuned back in a few times throughout. I never knew there was that fire match that burnt the Fiend. That's how I had to touch at one point.
Once again, what they did to build up to it was fantastic. Bringing Alexa Bliss into the Firefly Funhouse and making her...
That was good, yeah.
That sort of darkness character, and worked really well off each other. And then ultimately, it was an Inferno match, but just the angles were bad. And you can tell that Bray wouldn't have liked that. Well, you can tell in the documentary he didn't like it.
He hated the whole gimmick that they gave himself, the Burnt Fiend, which was quite funny. And when you look back at it, how awkward it looked. So it was, I think we've gone slightly ahead, didn't he? Because he actually won the Universal Championship when Alexa Bliss was brought on board.
Yeah, he won it again Strowman, and then lost it to Roman.
The returning Roman. Which was a good decision, to be fair.
Yeah, it was a good decision, but that'll be an.
And then, he goes on to have this fire match, and then it's basically the end of The Fiend.
Yeah.
The fire. It was his,
He kind of got buried. Well, buried is basically being destroyed by the wrestling business.
He was basically let go, weren't he? I think he'd had a few other problems. In the documentary, again, they don't glance away from it. I think Triple H says he was awkward to work with at this point.
Yeah, he was hard
to
work with.
And then he goes home, and then you show, I'll tell you what, his art, it should have been an artist from the beginning.
Yeah. No, he wasn't let go then. He did his WrestleMania, because he returned at WrestleMania when it was bringing the crowds back into the COVID era.
Was this 37?
It was. It was when The Fiend comes back.
I don't think I ever watched. I think 37 is one of the ones I actually missed. I don't think I've ever watched.
It was because we watched. I remember watching it at my uncle's office, but you didn't come that time.
I think I watched one night of it.
Yeah. The first night was Bray's return against Orton. And then Alexa Bliss turns on Bray, which, stupid decision.
Oh, was that at Mania?
Yeah. That was the whole Mania. Yeah.
Oh, I watched that night then. I didn't watch the second night. Because the second night is Roman as the champ, isn't it? I don't think I ever watched that one.
Yeah.
I think I had work early next day, and I don't think... So a couple of people didn't give me a very good review, so I never watched the Sunday.
No.
At some point I will now for this podcast, but I never watched it.
No, but that whole Bray returning... Yes.
Yeah.
Returning from the fire, and he's Bray Wyatt again, but... Losing another Mania after winning your first Mania match.
Yeah. So that's how unmemorable it was. I didn't think that was a Mania match. I thought that might have been like Fastlane.
That was a Mania match. Fastlane's
probably over by then. So then, he goes from another high to another low. And then, he gets released that summer then.
Yeah, but just prior to the summer.
Sort of.
He gets released like March.
It doesn't make SummerSlam, Mania. Does he? No. He's not at SummerSlam.
No.
And then he has that time off. As I said, he was an amazing artist, it turns out, that he never knew.
Yeah, some of his pictures that he did, it was stunning.
It's impressive.
And, yeah. Like that one that he did about the piers. That was nice. And
the one, JoJo, his fiance at the time of his death, mother of his last two kids, says it's like something to do with how they got engaged, and it's treasured by her.
Yeah.
And that was like an aha moment.
Yeah.
Watching.
And then the following is the archives of the WWE show, just to stop us from crying.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was the moment, actually. I think it did pop up going the following strong, and it was like the sixth time I was like, oh, okay, you stop now.
Yeah. I think in the documentary it tells you that, we've seen the documentary.
Yeah.
He starts doing like a reality show with his brother Bo, because Bo also got released at that point.
Yeah. So it built up, didn't it? Luke Harper died.
Yeah.
At one point.
In December of 2020, nice on Bray.
Yeah, that all got on top of him. Obviously, the stress at wearing that blooming fire costume and all that kind of basically broke him, to be honest. You get that impression
that. One of your best friends.
Yeah.
In a pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he comes back then. It goes through, doesn't it? Fast forwards to him talking about coming back. There's conversations with Triple H. And it's a long time. It's like 21 summer to Extreme Rules in 22. Again, so he's had another big break. Found painting. He's healed himself mentally.
So that they did throughout.
Oh, the door.
The door, the white rabbit. I remember checking on X and TikTok where they'd played that one like rockish slow song before Raw would start, and they're like, who is this? Who's coming? What is it? And it was very smart social media presence, like very smart social media marketing, because it gets people invested in it and, oh, what's going to happen next? I'm going to click this QR code, and who caused the world to die? And then you play Hangman, and it's like, you did.
What's it called? World Eater.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so that was the end of Extreme Rules, was him obviously coming through the door. I'm here, blokes, the lantern out. And then he cuts. This is the other bit that made me want to cry watching this documentary. Like, he had the realest promo ever of just being himself for the first time ever on camera, going, I'm glad I'm back. Thank you. I love you all.
You can tell how nervous he was. He was like on the verge of having a panic attack.
And big props to WWE letting him do that, because it could very much have been like, no, you're a character.
Yeah.
You're meant to be this scary.
You're not a human. You're a money machine.
Yeah. I like to think that's some of that mental health stuff was there in the background anyway at that point. It should have been coming to the forefront after this pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But letting him show that on screen was like another level of it, especially for the bad guy character, the heel. Yeah. And he was finally getting to work with his brother, because they were slowly building up to Uncle Howdy. And it was really cool.
All the stuff around it, the fact that they were bringing in new characters.
Yeah.
Bray was doing something new again, but like I said, you reinvent yourself, but don't reinvent your sort of aura. He's got that aura about him.
And they were building up to, building a feud with LA Knight, which regardless of how it ended, it was going over really well.
Yeah, because that's what sort of gave LA Knight that sort of push to stardom, really.
And
promos and that.
They worked together loads on live shows.
Yeah.
Which was a big thing for, well, both of them, really.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a stat at some point saying how many times they actually faced each other at live shows, because obviously it's 2 or 3 times a week probably they're facing each other off, no matter if they're on TV or not. Yeah, they do that, and it goes to the Mountain Dew match, which is one of the most divisive matches me and you have ever watched. The whole build-up to it, the premise of the funny lighting, again, you're not a big fan of, I was willing to accept.
It was the fact that it turned to be like a really dark, cool match to a gimmick match, but a gimmick match for Mountain Dew.
Reason. Yeah.
Like, that's just stupid.
And then the Uncle Howdy big moment, they chose the worst camera angle possible.
A crash mat.
Yeah, there's a crash mat. Fair enough. You've got to be safe. It's a big jump from high up. But then the camera angle shows you absolutely not aiming for LA Knight.
Yeah.
He aims to the left-hand side. And then in the documentary, they show it from another angle. And it looks incredible.
Perfect. Yeah, it looked so good.
It looks like he's just gone through an announce table from however high up it is. I'm no good at that kind of measurements. But yeah. So yeah, that was like the last time anyone really saw him then.
Yeah, because that was like the Rumble time, and on the documentary they said that they did one more live show and he told LA Knight his calf is seasoned.
Yeah, so they did a live show and he said, oh, I'm having problems. And I think there was going to be a WrestleMania match with somebody. It weren't LA Knight, was it? It was somebody else. But yeah, the whole, they do a live show. They show in the documentary. LA Knight's with him in the ring. He's like, oh, my calf's playing up here. Let's end this now. So they call that audible. But they end the match there and then. And that's the last time anyone ever sees him. And it's just like a, such a sad kind of ending to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't like we thought he was just injured and he's coming back. And like,
yeah,
that they said in the documentary he had a heart problem. It was his heart that was...
Yeah, they show, they say like COVID brought the...
Yeah, because he got COVID and then that's what caused his heart to run him.
Yeah, because it's serious because they say in it that he's basically in the hospital, nearly dead. They give him a jacket that basically shocks him back to life.
Yeah, and then they were going to put a pacemaker in him.
Yeah, they're working towards that, which is the same as Triple H has got.
Yeah.
And then they got to it, not even 10 days out of hospital. He's gone for a nap and he's just not got the jacket on and... Yeah, unfortunately, that was his time.
Yeah. 36 years old.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, that was sad.
Of how he affected us. Just hearing anybody at like that age goes from something underlying that nobody knew about until the time it happens is a really big shock to anybody. Yeah. We're getting to that age now, we're both 30, where that kind of stuff affects you. When you're 18, you hear someone is 18 and has died. It's like, oh,
yeah,
sad, but...
When
you're
getting on in...
Now when I'm 30 and I'm hearing one of my favourite entertainers is dead at 36, he's in good health because he's a professional sports person, sports entertainment, sport.
Yeah.
It's, oh shit, kind of territory.
Yeah. And like that week we had All In to go to.
Yeah.
And the sort of tributes that AEW gave to Bray was... perfect. It was a nice touch. Like even before the show started, there was a cosplayer of Bray, and like that cosplayer got a standing ovation, and we were all clapping him and stuff. It was just nice to see that the wrestling community come together of such
and
a sad
really
time.
Good social bits and SmackDown was on. They did all that, and they had Eric Rowan come back in for that.
Yeah, because Eric Rowan was there for Brody Lee's tribute show as well in December.
Yeah, and then they pull your heart out in the documentary. They show you some unused gear that he designed, like the new version of the Fiend, new mask, which was creepy, and it just makes you go, oh man,
that
pulled me back in from the going, oh, such a shame, 36, going, what you could have seen and what it could have gone on to be. Because and it was just, it would just make you feel all the feels.
Yeah.
And it shows you, I can't remember which way around it was, but they show you bits of his funeral with all the people there. Like a good chunk of, because they do it throughout the whole documentary, showing you how he affected and interacted with people and was a real personality. So you got Becky Lynch, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns at the funeral.
Goldust, Big Show, Taker.
And they had all in red as well.
Yeah, which was a nice touch. Like his urn was aflame, which was a nice touch.
Yeah, and it's like, oh man.
Mm-hmm.
And then the best quote of the lot is a paraphrase one because it was one of his bad guy quotes, obviously. But I am the colour red in a world full of
black and white.
I think.
Yeah,
I think that was it.
Yeah.
And that was such a good quote. And it was like on the background, Bo Dallas got up there and smashed his eulogy.
Yeah.
Strong. How he does, yeah.
Must be very strong.
Yeah, and it's just really wow, well done, the documentaries.
Yeah, highly recommend to watch it if you are a wrestling fan, if you're a Bray Wyatt fan, even if you're not a Bray Wyatt fan, but you know of wrestling.
We've recommended it to one of our friends who doesn't really watch wrestling, but watch this because it makes you feel things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. Sad, very sad, but very good documentary.
Yeah.
And then they teased Bo Dallas, Taylor Rotunda's return, which did make me smile.
Yeah, it's like the legacy of Bray continuing through Bo Dallas, who deserves...
It looks like it's going to be some version of an Uncle Howdy.
Yeah.
They probably won't call it Uncle Howdy. It'll be called something else. I'm hoping he uses Taylor Rotunda.
It's a Rotunda name, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we were talking about that last night, weren't we?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would love to see that legacy continue of Bray.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the whole world in his hands and doing all that. But we didn't even touch on that song. But
he's got the whole world in his hands, fam.
It just all just hearing it now makes me sad.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a point I think I had it on Spotify, and some people would hear me with it on and going, "What is that?" at the minute, it happens with Glorious Bobby Roode's entrance. It's quite high up on my like songs on Spotify recently. That gets played every now and again, and my missus just looks at me going, "What is going on here?" Just get a bathrobe and come walking down the stairs.
Yeah, come round, it's like, glorious. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a nice way to say that this podcast will be on Spotify and where you get your podcasts from, whether it's Amazon, Apple, Spotify. But if you want to see us, like, in person, not face-to-face, but if you want to see the video version of it, is on YouTube. We love your feedback. This is something new. We are very passionate wrestling fans. Well, I am. Yeah, Aaron is as well.
Yeah, we like the wrestling. We don't know how to do podcasting at the minute. So any feedback? If you're this far in, I hope you have got some feedback because we're, an hour and a half plus here. No, thank you for listening. We'll be back. Wow, a bit of a heads up with this one. If you listen to this one first, as this comes out, there are multiple WrestleMania 40 videos coming out on YouTube. There's a couple of episodes of the podcast all built around 40. This was just, we wanted to get something down for the Bray Wyatt documentary.
Because he's the reason why me and Aaron became closer friends and bigger wrestling fans. And all just thinking about it now was Bray Wyatt, which is cliche to say, but it's true.
We didn't really think about it until we watched the documentary going, holy shit, what year was that? And then going, oh, that was the year we got back into, well, didn't get back into wrestling, but knew we both liked wrestling more. So, it was a real eye-opener.
It was. And, just thank you, everyone, for listening to the podcast and hit that music.